The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love till 9 p.m. daily in Sarah's Kitchen. And there's free admission entertainment every weekend.
It's 7 p.m, it's Monday evening. It's time for the DL Debate. Check this. Yes, indeed, we're beaming out from the famous Mountaintop Studios here at Highland Radio and at highlandradio.com. Thanks for tuning in, downloading, streaming, or wherever you're at this evening. Another packed show coming up for you. Donegal not playing, of course, our seniors in action next week against Tyrone, but still in all, a packed weekend. We've had the Hurlers there with a very impressive 118-19 points victory against Armagh, securing the top spot in Division 3A and going back to Division 2B, and early Jerry Gilmore goal setting them on their way. 110-7 at half time, Armagh rallied, but Donegal held firm for the victory. Well done to Mickey McCann and his troops. Also, the Donegal ladies, who've been up against it in the top flight, home to Cork. No one actually was expecting a victory. Well, no one I was talking to, but they pulled it out of the bag. And who else but Jerry McLaughlin with an impressive 1-5 out of their 2-6, the 8 points v Cork. We're going to get some reaction on that. And Michael Nocken's new role as president of the LGFA from Maria Kelly. Coming up, we'll be talking to Gary McDade around under-20s and their Ulster final defeat. But first, I'm delighted to say former teammate, and I called you Niamh Conlon, Donegal powerhouse in the intro there, John, the ad. You probably would have heard it there. Still looking like a powerhouse. He's busting out of this shirt. Now, I must apologise. We're missing our video edit this week, but he's in mighty shape. Yeah, John, welcome to DL Debate.
Thanks, Brendan.
Listen, John, before we get in, we're going to talk about your career later on the show. We have different people coming on in and on. You can join in when you feel the need. But, John, currently, since you've hung up the boots, you're doing consultancy now and you're over and back the pond trying to make a buck.
Yeah, I suppose primarily I'm trying to raise two young fellas that are wrecking the house and wrecking everybody's head. And from a career point of view, I have my own business. I'm over and back to the US doing business financing and restructuring in the US. So, yeah, it's interesting and gets me to warmer climes on occasions.
Always nice. I think I rushed Sharon and the kids' dinner this evening. I must apologise about that. Listen, no offence, I was complimenting about in the shirt. You could maybe hold back on the dinners a small bit. That's and maybe missed the dessert, John. But listen, that's certainly a busy life. And, you know, at the minute, I suppose, we look to ex-players and we wonder about coaching. And that it's hard, very hard, in that time frame that you're doing, to get involved in any kind of team.
Yeah, just the game has developed so much to the point where it's a full-time profession. Unless you have all day, every day, to either, you know, you're planning the team schedules, you're having your own schedules, it's become a full-time job. So that the, you know, when I grew up, you know, a manager showed up, threw you a ball, had a training session on Tuesday night, maybe did something on a Thursday night and you played a game. Now it's 24/7. And unless you can give, it's like anything, unless you can give it 100%, there's no point being involved. And from that standpoint, I've taken a step back from it and stayed out of it.
Yeah, yeah. And listen, John, very interesting story. And, you know, the change in sport and football from your time, from the story about you making your debut and that, you know, compared to where things are now, it's like a completely different world. I can't wait to hear that there later on in the show. I'm now being joined on the line by top coach, Glenn Swilly's finest, Gary McDade, school coach, county team coach, and now also, I'm glad to say, pundit. Great coverage by him and Dermot of the Donegal Rons Ulster final. He just came up a bit short. Gary, how are you this evening?
All good, Brendan. As I said to you off the air, difficult position for me this evening, stuck between yourself and John Kildare right in the middle. Either side of two superpowers of club football.
I think it might be my side you get squeezed out. I don't think I'd have been ever able for John in my day. But Gary, listen, you know, we heard about your commentary there. We were in the way to Donegal Dublin the first day against Monaghan, and the heroic effort in the two games getting the final, something that wasn't expected.
Aye, probably fair enough statement, Brendan. You know, coming into it, you know, and that's what would have been coming out from Sean Paul and the boys as well, that probably wouldn't have been a huge amount expected outside probably their own group for this team. And on paper, the Monaghan team were definitely, I suppose, they had five seniors and the likes of Aaron Mulligan, who had played every game for Monaghan in the National League to date. I mean, it was a tremendous, huge result from that day in a horrible conditions in Monday's Field in Ballyshannon. It was absolutely horrendous, so it was, and you know, like the conditions were brutal to ask people to go out and play and that there, and it was slightly better in the semi-final against the Loop, like, you know, and I was actually laughing this week to myself, the court manager, when they were beat by Kerry and West United, he actually said, he says, in the winter time, he says, they usually put the cattle in, he says, but they let the under 20 footballers out this year, they said, for the winter. And, you know, I just summed it up well. So it did. It's just absolutely, to me, Bren, yourself, and you would know that there, it's just not the time of year to be showcasing talent, you know, and I think it's not fair on the lads as well. Slightly gone off tangent here. It's last year and the last the year before, they were given May, June, July the opportunity to showcase their talents, and where the pitches were hard and the sun's high in the sky. But Christ, you know, I mean, it's far from that there now. And one or two people would have said, you know, Asher, the minors are going on the minute, but it's minor league. The minors are getting to play their championship in April and May, you know, when the pitches are better and they're getting an opportunity to show that there. And even Paul Devlin, the Tyrone manager, actually commented after the Antrim semi-final, he says some of their players actually had early signs of onset of hypothermia after the game. So to me, the boys and the high chairs in Croke Park have to really take a look at this here, and they have to move it back to May, June, July, what it was the last 2 years, because not alone the Weller, it's overrunning with colleges football as well, Brendan. It's overrun with universities football, so it is. And I mean, like, I'll give you a perfect example. St. Pat's Mahara, all their players didn't go to the Derry team this year. They were playing Macquarie Cup, they concentrated on that there. And listen, Derry were beaten by Antrim in the first round. No doubt had those Mahara players, they probably would have went further. And probably it's no different in our own county as well. None of our Macquarie Cup players in the college decided to go up better, because it's just a lot to ask of players, like, you know, like, and when you think of our Macquarie Cup team this year, like, we had the county minor fullback Kieran Tobin, we had the county minor centre back Jack Galler, we had the county minor cornerback Jamie Grant, we had the county minor both midfielders Owen Dowlin and Keelan Dunleavy, and we had your own nephew played inside, Shane Munnan from the Nave Colmkill Club. Like, and like, I don't think Donegal can afford to be missing players of that calibre, so there's just too many crossovers. And it's to allow counties to put their best foot forward.
Yeah, yeah, Gary, interesting points. You know, I'm looking at, not to get political, the fixtures situation is the biggest issue there is, and a bit like in the election there, about the health service, is it possible to actually fix it? You know, you're on about the current climate of demands on players right through, you know, underage, you've got clubs, you've got colleges, then you've got county teams, different levels of county teams. You know, to fit everything in, I appreciate the weather was unusually bad at this time of year. You'd normally think you'd get an odd good day, but it's shocking in terms of asking lads to go out to play. But I just wonder, I mean, Kieran Cunningham was on last week and he was talking about, you know, playing club fixtures throughout the summer, you know, letting there be weeks in between so lads could play in the summer. Just like you were saying, very unfair to run a competition off, particularly with the way things have been this last few weeks.
And like, these lads are probably, you know, if they're still at school, Bren, this is a chance for them to showcase their talent as well. Maybe they're not playing Macquarie Cup or McLaren Cup. Maybe they're playing C or D football at college level. So maybe they're not being recognised or noticed. By playing county under-20s, it's given them a chance to put themselves on the platform and put their best foot forward and say, here, listen, I might get a scholarship. It might allow me an opportunity to get to college or maybe get to a college or get to do a course that I wouldn't want to do. So it's totally unfair as well. And listen, it takes a lot of communication as well. Like, you know, last year and the year before, the way I would have managed, like, I would only expect our Macquarie Cup players to come in on a Sunday. They wouldn't have came near me during the week, so they wouldn't that, because I knew under the management and the coaching that they were getting the college that they were fine, you know what I mean? And they came in probably as fit, if not fitter than anyone else when the Macquarie Cup season ended after that there. But I mean, like, to me, it's just wrong. It has been moved back, and people argue then that it interferes with club football, but because it's such a short season, it's not a huge impact in the club. But I think Donegal is probably, a lot of our counties could look at Donegal and take a lead out of it as well. Because when I look at our neighbours in Derry and Tyrone, their club season is a mess. So it is, they'd actually stop playing during the summer. And like, our lads now, just everyone here in club football, just gets on and we go ahead and play games. We have the county players from month of April. Right, lads, we'll see you probably August, September, whatever. And everyone just gets on. And I think more people have to adopt that attitude.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Gary, just taking us into yesterday's game, Tyrone, you know, top side. You mentioned just listening to you in the commentary that the goal, the sending off, and of course, and the purple patch. I know the goal was the killer blow, but there was a period there where Tyrone had a purple patch and just pulled away from Donegal, and then were able to control the game.
Aye, and you know, there's nothing between these teams, Brendan. I was looking back at the history books. There's nothing between these teams coming through. When they met at Buchrana Cup at under 16, these two same groups of players, Donegal actually beat Tyrone by a point. Then they met at under 17, first round in Ulster Championship. And that was the first year where they introduced the under 17 Championship across the country. And Donegal actually drew Tyrone the first round. So they did it. And Tyrone actually beat Donegal by a point. Francis Field was in charge of Donegal that year. But he didn't have access to his minor players. The minor players actually weren't allowed to play with him that day, which would have been under 18 at the time. So that Tyrone team got over the line just about, and they went on to win an Ulster, first Ulster under 17 tournament, and went on to win the first Ulster under 17 All Ireland. They actually beat Roscommon in the final, and it was definitely noted within the Tyrone camp, and it would be acknowledged in the Tyrone camp that Donegal squad of players would have been one of the toughest, if not the toughest, group that they would have came up against. So, you know, everyone was going into that game expecting on Saturday, you know, blockbuster stuff. And listen, Tyrone, Donegal, even Jeremy Doherty mentioned to me off the air, he was wondering if the tunnel would be wide enough for both teams to get in at half time after the incident in Roma last week. But listen, it was, because one of the teams were held back at half time. But the major turning point, I suppose, in the game is probably a few, like, you know, before we came on air, the game was levelled half-time. Donegal played really, really well the first half against the breeze. What they've done all year, played against the breeze, but it was their best first half of football, because the last two games against Down and Monaghan, they were poor first half, and most people wouldn't have given much for them at half-time going in the second half. But because they played against the one, it is definitely the strength of this team. And they went in five each at half-time. Tyrone would have been the unhappier team, but they came out to start the second half, and we were maybe 90 seconds before we got on the air, and Ethan Harkin, I can't remember who passed him the ball, he passed him a great ball, diagonal ball, from left to right to the Hull side. So he did from the stand to the Hull side, and caught a great, put his hand up to the mark, and the referee, as if he forgot what the mark rule was brought in, just kind of waited for 3-4 seconds, the next thing he blew, because Ethan stood, he blew Ethan up for over-carrying. So, like, the game was 5-all. Definitely a turning point in the game. Would have put Donegal 6-5 up, you know. But they kept trouncing on Donegal. So they did, and in fairness to them, the 43rd man was probably the next huge turning point, because, unfortunately, young Canavan, then he made a massive run down the middle. So he did, and the Donegal cornerback, Oisin Wallace, actually dragged him down. Listen, it could have been a goal. It was making overlaps. He was making inroads, so he was. So it was probably, he wasn't left with much else to do. And he got the black card. Absolutely massive. And, like, I've seen the German on the air. Football's now almost become like rugby, so it has, when you get sunburned. Teams really go to town on you. They really do. Like, you know, you see in the rugby there now when you watch it, like, is it nearly at least a try and a conversion, if not a second try in that 10 minutes? Tyrone punished probably Donegal hugely, more than I have seen any team punish the black card to date, and that's across seniors as well. Obviously, it's only in since January, since the McKenna Cup. But absolutely massive. 5 points in 10 minutes, four of them coming from the corner forward, Ethan Jordan. Absolutely huge performance from him. And he would have been coming in probably the lesser known. He was coming in under the radar. Everybody was talking about Canavan, Cheering and Quinn inside, another big lads from Cookstown, Joe Agoos in the middle of the park, Anton Fox centre back, Corey Monroe. He was a lad coming out under the radar, maybe didn't get the attention, and listen, they give Conor O'Donnell his handful, so he did. And probably, look, you know, thinking about maybe Aaron Gahooly was on the line, so he was. It was his first game from the McCool's Club to get back from injury. He rolled his ankle the Thursday night before the Monaghan game. Massive man marker. I would have had him last year in the 20s as well. Very good player. Michael Murphy would have played him as his main marker in the LYT Sigerson team this year as well. Possibly, you know, looking back, it was an opportunity for him maybe trying to control the situation and get a grab at Jordan, because he just seemed to play elusive in that 10 minutes. But in fairness to young Cornell, after they got back in 15, he kind of changed his attitude then. He got on the ball nearly Neil McGee-esque. He started to attack up the field and put Jordan in the back foot. So then end up Jordan actually being ended up taking off the pitch, but, you know, he still picked up the man of the match, because he just, his influence was huge over the game.
mighty stuff, Gary. You know, for the likes of Barrett now, is that a 1 year tenure? What way did he take that job?
Yeah, that's the way from my reading of the time it was that he was definitely pointed for 1 year. But listen,
he's made his mark. You know, I think he's certainly an up and coming coach because you know Donegal not expected now. It's going to be hard once you're in a final, Gary. As you know, you're there to win it. And listen, thanks a mil for summing that up for us. And I'm sure we'll be hearing from you again going forward.
No worries, no. But definitely, like, you know, on the show, I think, you know, it's huge for him to get there. What no one was really expecting that there, I suppose, off that group of players. And listen, it's very much when you look back now of the way Declan Bonner came up, I suppose, to that senior team, that the man in Donegal, you know, if you won games, you're like, you're nearly looked upon as a genius, you know. And if you lose a game, you're a disaster. So you are, if you lose a game or two. And listen, it's a big thing. And suppose Mick McGrath would have been part of the current county chairman, would have been part of Declan Bonner's backer team, and would often have mentioned in the past that there's a pathway there to you know, for managers that are successful. And you know, it very much points to Sean Paul, you know, whenever Declan's time's up at the minute to take over the senior reins.
Yeah, that's a big endorsement, Gary. Listen, thanks very much for coming on and talking to us the DL Debate.
Okay, no worries, Brent.
The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love till 9 p.m. daily in Sarah's Kitchen. And there's free admission entertainment every weekend.
Now in the DL Debate, we're joined by Maria Kelly after Donegal's stunning performance today against Cork. Maria, how are you?
I'm not too bad, not too bad, Breton. Maria Kelly, God, yeah. Formerly Maria Kelly.
I don't want to give it away there.
yeah, all good, Breton. I suppose,
former captain and All-Ireland winner, etc. I'll get that in before you throw the dig at me, you know.
Yeah, that'll come later, yeah. It depends how nice you are to me now during this interview, dearest brother. But no, all good. Thrilled today with the win Donegal ladies had over Cork. I mean, for Maxie and the team, the commitment and effort these girls get, like, it's a totally different level from when I used to play. And, I mean, they'd only won one going into today's game. And, you know, for a win against Cork, any day is a great day. So I think the motivation now after what they'll get from today's one will really help them go on to the last two games. And hopefully that will drive them on to stay within the Division 1 league for this year.
Brilliant. 260 points, Maria. I mean, we keep talking about it. I don't want to be disrespectful to anybody else, but Dearly McLaughlin, 1-5 out of 2-6. You know, it's impossible not to obviously talk about that. And I just thinking, John, I don't know about you, all the sport I've played, you know, even playing the ground ball, etc. I've never seen anybody score as much at any age, you know, or any code as much as Geraldine.
She is exceptional. And it's a travesty that she's been overlooked year in, year out. Where anybody that knows anything about Gaelic football, be it male or the female code, she's just an exceptional talent.
Yeah. She's phenomenal. Like, I mean, she's just a powerhouse captain today. She really took it all in the game to Cork today. You know, and in fairness, 8 points. I mean, Brenton, I know I have always played defence. Few forwards always get the limelight when the games are won. But the defence kept a clean sheet today of goals, which is a big thing. That's a really strong Cork forward line as well. You know, all stars in there. And fair play to Ian McGallan and David Foley. They had a great performance today as well. But Geraldine is phenomenal. She's just unreal. Like, mouth open half the time in some of the scores that she takes. She's a great bit of stuff, and I'm delighted. I'm delighted to see Niamh Hegarty came on there today because she's a powerhouse. She's out injured, and that girl works incredibly hard. She got a score there at the end as well, so she'll be a big support for the Donegal girls as they push on the last two games. But Geraldine, oh yeah, as you said, like, she should be all-star, you know, a few times over at this stage. She's unreal.
Yeah, good point, John. Listen, Maria, fair play for remembering the corner and fall back. Say, you don't have Paddy McBurdy without having a Neil McGee, and that is never true words said. Maria, just quickly, Michael Nocton, adopted Donegal man, I think, at this stage, but he's a Sligo man, but he's taking a big award for next year, LGFA. He won the presidency.
Yeah, like, Michael Nocton, I'm thrilled, delighted for him, because the guy, he sleeps, breathes, eats ladies football. And, you know, it's so hard in this day and age to get people to commit you know, especially trying to get people as good as this guy into ladies GAA. But I mean, he would have captained or managed Donegal for Masters, ladies to county championship. He managed Donegal. I played under him and a selector. He's got everything, incredible skill sets, a business savvy guy. And the LGFA, I'd say, are just delighted to get somebody like him as president now going on 2021. Like, he gets 60% of the vote, and that just tells you, like, he was chairperson Donegal and Ulster, so these people know exactly what Michael Nocton's about. So I'd say they're just thrilled to have him, and I wish him all the best luck because he's a great guy. So I don't know how many hours in the day Michael has because he's phenomenal, but he'll be LGFA, I just say now, he'll direct them in the right way in the next couple of years, and I'm thrilled for him.
Maria, fantastic stuff, and thanks a million, of course, captain, and brilliant entertainer, I must say, after game, sing songs, etc. Almost as famous for that now, I think, as any. Maria, thanks a million for joining us on the DL debate. Chat later.
Thank you, cheers, all the best, thank you.
The DL debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love till 9 p.m. daily in Sarah's Kitchen, and there's free admission entertainment every weekend.
Continuing now on the DL debate, we're keeping it all things Niamh Connell / Glenties, even though Gilday set up home here in, of course, sweet Letterkenny town. We're chatting online to Brendan Braddis O'Donnell. How are you this evening, sir?
Good, Brendan, thanks, and yourself?
Keeping well. Hey, John was just being him having a laugh off air here about the X Factor. You weren't in it, no? You're a man of many talents.
I was hosting it, unfortunately.
You're hosting it? Very good.
Elvis came back from the grave, so we did like just for one night only.
And to be fair, Brad, I seen bits and pieces of it, and it looked like Elvis came back from the grave.
To be fair, he's dead over 40 years now, so there's a few cobwebs about him, all right.
Brad, so I was talking about getting you out from behind the camera. We all just work some of the unseen stuff. So you're getting out from behind the camera if you're hosting now as well. You're a man of many talents.
It was all for a good cause. It was for the Glenties playground and the Glenties Day Centre, so it was kind of an investment in a way, so it is, you know what I mean, down the line. Like, we'll all be heading there, so we will, and it was for Martin and Jerry Dock's 50th, well, I think it's more their 60th, to be honest. I think they're living on, they're getting back 10 years off it, you know. So it's something we'd done before for their 40th, and it was just a mad bit of crack trying to get all the townspeople together, you know, and having a laugh, just, you know, and raising money for local charity. So we had a great crack doing it. Now, to be fair, you know, we wanted Gilday to come in, like, you know, as himself, but we couldn't afford him, you know.
I'm just wondering, we haven't actually sorted out a fee. We'll have to get to that after, John, just for tonight. Brad, I see you at games, obviously. I know you do music videos and that as well. Could you just give everyone an idea of what you cover there with the Jackson Media TV?
Well, to be honest, Brendan, can I cover a lot of things? I'm a freelance cameraman, like, I mean, that's kind of my main sort of bread and butter as such, like, so I would be out doing a lot of the live games and that, you know, I'd be out with Sky Sports and RTE and Air Sports and TG Cahar and that, you know, that'd be what I would do most of the weekends, as well as the Donegal games and that, you know, and then during the weekend that I kind of do corporate videos and that, you know, for businesses, and do some documentaries as well too, like, and then, you know, do music videos as well too, like, and that, you know, and like music, and to be honest, music I'd be really big into. I don't play any instruments. I don't sing unless I'm dressed as Elvis. And, you know, I love the sport then, obviously, as well, too. And you get to meet so many interesting people, the likes of yourself and John and that as well.
you don't have to be nice just because we went to school together.
There's a documentary coming up here, I think.
Glenty's the real story.
But I'm just asking us off air, like, you know.
We're going to run through John's career, you know, which Brad's culminated, obviously, in club terms, I suppose, in the famous 2005, which I'm unfortunately going to have to go one day again. Trip down memory lane can be tough at times, but
I know it can be very good.
Brad, I know earlier in the year before we actually got the deal to beat off the ground, you spoke to me just around, it was just pre-Ulster final. Brad, I wonder, could you just describe for us, you know, around the three county finals and around particularly at Ulster final, what was happening in the Niamh Connell area and the buzz was about it and what these lads have injected back into the area?
Tell you, Brendan, it was incredible. I think this year's victory, like, I think, especially one in Donegal, you know, I think it was up there with the 2005. I don't think anything will top 2005. But in general terms, in terms of where we were going into a third county final, where we might have got beat, you know, when we were favourites, to be fair, to get beat, like, you know, in the sense that nobody had given us a hope, even into the second, third game, and maybe going on then, maybe a wee bit, sort of, people sort of were beginning to change their mind. But I think coming through that adversity, and as you know as well, in 2005, we had no chance, allegedly, and we've seen what we done then, and it was kind of a mirror image of that in a way, you know what I mean, because we'd taken a lot of young fellas in from the previous 2 years as well that made a big difference and they kind of changed their style of play a wee bit. But the whole buzz, and to be honest, I don't think I've ever felt as much pride around the parish as I did this year, because everybody was so together and everybody was kind of, you know, their backs were against the wall and thinking, you know, if we get beaten in the third final, that could set us back 10 years. And even though we have good players coming through, but the victory has possibly taken us on a lot more now than it has, than we probably even expected ourselves, I think, you know what I mean? Because it's really given the whole area a massive buzz, like, you know, and it's just, it's the togetherness and it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, and, you know, people talk about it, us being a big club. We're not a big club, and John can testify to that as well when we were playing. Like, we have a big geographical area, but we don't have numbers. Like, and to be honest, not sounding fur mouth now, but we're coming up now, like, under six and under eights and that, you know, we're struggling for numbers for boys in particular, you know what I mean? Like, because yeah. I was chatting to Stephen McDermott, a good Glen Finn man, who's now a good Niamh Connell man, you know, who's in charge of the under eights and tens, and he was telling me that, like, so. But, you know, you fight with it, and you go with it, and you live for the moment, and hopefully we'll have, the man say, brighter, more bright years ahead as well, too, you know. But yeah, it's going to be tough, as you know, in Donegal.
Yeah, listen, Brad, I mean, we were there, I suppose, units. We lost two games, we got into the third final. But in the third final, I remember we were favourites, and we were kind of in control of it, whereas, as you said, yous were underdogs all the way. And particularly, you know, something really stands out in my mind. Obviously, listen, Brad, I'm not going to, you know, I don't like those tactics. I don't know anybody that actually does. It's something that Niamh Connell's got very used to. I'm keep waiting for Niamh Connell to change tactics a bit or open up as a team. I think, I mean, surprisingly, in the Ulster final, it looks like they did change tactics quite a bit. But just taking it back to that third game, particularly when Darragh Boyle hit that third point and he points to air. Honestly, I've never seen courage like that. You know, they're completely down and out. And the weight of everything, the couple of years before, the three games, everything was weighing on the shoulders. Where that team found the courage to come back from there, I thought that's one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen in sport.
I would agree, Brendan. I think it was, you know, being written off, and as you say, especially in extra time, like, I mean, a point is worth, like, a point in extra time, if you go a point ahead, is almost like 4 points or 5 points at that stage, because the mind and the body, like, after the heavy games of the previous time and the quick turnaround, like, I mean, you would think, geez, these boys can't come back from this again. But it just seemed to inject more life into our boys, and they were thinking, right, lads, let's step it up again. We're in a wee bit of bother here. And they just done it, and they stepped up that gear, and they stepped up the next gear, and then they controlled it out. And that comes down, I think, a lot to the likes of Leo and Owen Wade and, you know, Marty Boyle and Anthony and all these boys, like, you know, the experience in Brenda, you know, the experience really came through with them, in the sense that they, you had that, and then you had the young fellas coming in to add that fresh impetus and a slight change of tactic on it as well. You know, when you have the likes of the older boys there, and, you know, as a young fella, when you know that they're there, it's kind of like a safety net around it. You're willing to try other things, and you're willing to go through brick walls for them as well, like, because yeah, they're unbelievable players as well as great club people, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And that's what we're blessed with, you know.
I spoke to Johnny the Butcher actually earlier there. I was trying to get a bit of dirt and go there. I couldn't find it. I know, it was just...
I have 10 people to
do
up there, though.
It works both ways, Bradis.
Johnny, what a stalwart Johnny was. Top man. He mentioned as well, obviously, Thompson, you know, Kieran being made captain, and the role that he took on then at vital times, really. And I've just said chatting to Oisin as well about his role with Donegal. And, you know, he's become an integral player slowly but surely. You know, he's an absolute wand of a left foot, but his importance, you know, I think he's a real go-to player and definitely a leader. And just in Donegal players, we got a wee word from your buddy Tosh in the capital here. You might hear what he had to say about the current setup.
Yep.
Glenties are county champions. They have only one man on the team. We have three or four in the subs, never got a game.
What do you think of that there, Bradis? Is he right or wrong?
I don't know, it sounds like it was recorded in a bar, was it there?
Yeah, well, listen, where else would we be after a match? But no, I'm only out back, we're only messing, you know, Tosh, he, I suppose the couple of lads, John McKelvey was in there, and Doc's wee lad was in the squad as well, and Owen, I suppose, listen, their time will come. They've seen bits and pieces of action. But as John was saying, as we're talking off air, you know, quite often, listen, if you have a club team that's together and hasn't a load of four or five players away all the time and you can call on them, you can build a sense, that's probably a plus thing now, really, for Niamh Connell.
Well, it is in the modern game, especially. I think, you know, if you don't have as many county footballers, it means that you have all your players together a lot, like, you know, because, like, we wouldn't be blessed with having many jobs around the area and that, you know, so a lot of people would have to go away either, you know, to Dublin or Belfast or Cork or whatever the case may be, you know, or even into Derry and that, you know, so it can be awkward to get all the lads together. But when you have them, you know, especially in the summer, if you've none of the lads in county football and you have them together as a unit with your club, I mean, it's a massive advantage, like, you know, because, you know, the likes of Kilkear would have that problem where they've about five or six players, you know, and that's awkward at club level. You know, Unions are the same as well now this year too, like in Gidore. So it's probably an advantage in that sense for Niamh Connell maybe to have less county footballers maybe involved, you know. But I don't think it's a reflection on the county team as well, you know, because every, you know, Unions were through a spell there where they were county champions and maybe only had one or two players on as well. Like, so it's just the way it goes, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I don't know if it's you know, reflective on the county team.
No, I totally agree. I think, listen, if you're good enough to play for Donegal at this stage or you're needed in the team, you're going to be in it. We aren't that type of county where we can say, you know what, I'm a manager from a certain place, you're not good. No, I think we know who your best players are and they're by and large playing every week. But listen, Braz, thanks a million for joining us. Niamh Connell are strong going into this year, and with people like you behind them, it makes them all the more stronger. So I don't know if our Unions lads will catch up to them or not, but certainly, reflecting on a brilliant season, Brad, is unreal. And I think going into next year, you know, there'll be a lot of strength. And if we see this long ball coming in at the start of the championship, I think we'll be all wary.
Well, hopefully, listen, a good thing, I think we can shake it up as well too. You know what I mean? Like, and I think hopefully, it's like anything, to retain a championship is a very, very difficult task in Donegal. And, you know, hopefully we can do it. It's going to be tough. But I think you need a wee bit of luck and all your players injury-free as well too, like, you know, and the same goes to Donegal, like, and hopefully, you know, I have a good feeling for Donegal the year as well too, because they're going in the right direction too, so that helps club football, it helps county football, and they all help each other, so please God, we'll have a good 2020.
Sounds
good as well, doesn't it?
Brad, it sounds good to me. I'll see you about Balbuffet then as we take on the old enemy.
Absolutely, definitely, you'll see me up on the roof.
Good man,
mate.
Brad, it's good man.
Right?
All the best, lad.
Cheers, lads, bye-bye.
Thank you, mate.
Aye, good fella, Brad is there joining us on the line. Over now to my main man, John G, has been sitting patiently here, listening in. John, your career. Now, I'm not surprised, John, you said working for yourself. You obviously were well able to communicate, but I always thought you were very single-minded as a player. A lot of people won't know how long you played, from 93 to 2004 for the county.
Yeah.
It's a long, long time. You had quite an interesting debut. Do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, I suppose I came into the squad just missed 92. I was abroad working in 92, and you know, so maybe that had some impact on whether I was there.
Did you bit of a health issue?
I had an health issue as well. Yeah, I had B12 deficiency.
Yeah,
so it was one of those things. The more I trained, the less fit yeah, I became, and it took a couple of years to diagnose that. So the early part of my career was very hit and miss. Played games, didn't play games. Played, you know, a couple of good games, and then faded out. And then, you know, early on, and again at that age, different environment, different focus, everything was just more lax. And it was only later in my career that maybe I got totally tuned into, you know, what I wanted and knew the time was running out, and then maybe got more focus on it. So, you know, early part of my career maybe wasted. And then as well as that, that team was a very successful team, just won the All-Ireland in 92, and a very, very tight bunch of players, a lot of very big characters, huge characters. And, you know, for a lad from Glenties to try to fit into that, and at that stage, like we were just talking to Bradis, and you know, Glenties is a powerhouse in club football in Donegal right now, one of the most successful teams in the county over the last 15 years. But at that stage, we were playing intermediate football. You know, winning a Division 2 league title was a big thing for us. We didn't have county players. Like, we had Pat Ward prior to us, we had Michael Goller. So there wasn't any this big lineage of county players. We didn't have the McHughes of this world's units at Charlie McGrew and Paul Carr and all these guys coming through. We didn't have that. So breaking into that and trying to establish yourself in that environment was difficult. And as we're going back to your earlier point, like my debut in 93, I went to Mass. Probably the last time we went to Mass, maybe. But at Mass, Mother, God rest her, shipped me out the door on Sunday morning, as was the norm. And I was met at the gate with my father, by my father, with a pair of football boots. And I was looking at him, and he goes, McAniff's just after ringing Leo's, because we had no phone in the house at the time, back in the day, long before social media. So Brian McAniff had rung Leo's bar, Leo McLoone's father, who then had gone out and got my father and said, listen, John's playing against Down in Ballyshannon at 2 o'clock, and this was 12 o'clock Mass. So into the car, up the road, serious preparation. You can imagine the food intake and everything else was top notch, and landed thinking, okay, I'll be sitting on the bench, and I started wing half forward. So that was my first game for Donegal in 1993.
And that was against the top,
the then Down.
Who were
one of the top sides in the country at that stage.
Yes, yes, yes. That was quite a baptism. You had a few run-ins. Who was it? DJ Keane?
DJ Keane, yeah. Nice man.
Yeah, he actually is a nice
player. No, he is. On a football sense, I get that. Yeah. But yeah, that was so. You can imagine at that stage, hadn't played much football, had come back, had no preparation, and then jumped thrown in against the Down captain at the time. And
What age were you then, John?
93. I can't give away my age right now, but I was 22.
That's still formative to be thrown in, but not like McNiff to throw you in. A sink or swim.
McNiff, like, you're grand. And that was the first day out.
So it was McNiff then, and the different managers you played with then, who took over after Brian?
We had PJ McGowan then. McGowan. For a while.
Just before Bonner then.
Then we had Bonner.
Yeah.
And of all the managers I played with, I think Declan was probably the most unlucky in the sense that, you know, we were robbed of an Ulster final, I think it was 98.
Mm-hmm.
The infamous Joe Brawley goal with the Jeffrey nudge.
That's right.
And there was a kind of evolution from, you know, that 92-93 squad, you know, had won the All-Ireland, was very competitive. And then there was this transition where there were some new guys coming into the squad, and it was hard to make the breakthrough. And then that some of that squad filtered out, and that 98 squad with the like of, you know, Higgs was playing, and Tony and those guys were still around, like, you know, so it was a good backbone of a side, and maybe should have done a little bit better than we did. No back door back then. Was sink or swim. It was real championship football. There was no other day out. You got caught and you were gone.
That's it. And many's a good team. You know, likes of Down, obviously, and Down Derry. And those times, if there was a back door as well, probably would have been another All-Ireland.
Well, you even look at Donegal in 93, you would suggest that we hadn't got caught in that day against Derry, and that torrential day in Clonus, would we all remember? Like, if there was a back door back then, I would suggest that team, Ulster football was so strong back then, that you would think that, you know, in any given year over those 4 or 5 years, Down, Derry, Donegal would have been all in the Super 8 as they are right now, and all been in semi-finals, pushing for finals, and just different era. It created different atmospheres. In a way, I suppose, as an older player looking back from a nostalgic point of view, I don't think you can beat knockout football when it's knockout football.
Yeah, it was. I only caught the end of that, John. It was such a different feel to it. You know, when you have that backup plan, and plus, for a team like Donegal, it's at the higher end of the scale. You know, going through the back door by and large, you're going to go on a run now. You're going to play teams that aren't as good as you. Of course, the second-tier championship coming in there as well. John, before we get further on, your debut in Croke Park, who was that against? Is there a story lurking there, is there?
I'm trying to think. We played... Oh, there was. Well, I suppose new Croke Park versus old Croke Park.
Yeah.
During some of those years when I was in and out and hit and miss in the county squad, I spent a number of summers in the US. And had played in Boston with Donegal Boston for a few seasons and had a great time. Great club, great people, really looked after everybody out there. And one of those years I actually went up to play in New York, which was a different championship at the time. I think we're beyond the statute right now and they can't come back and get me, so I think I'm all right from a GAA perspective. Yeah. But I played up there and we got beat in a New York final. Good side, Leslie McGetting was playing, Enda Muldoon. And came back to Donegal, and it was Declan's first year, and he brought me back into the squad. And I'd gone through some medical checks and stuff like that, and I had a handle on the B12 situation, and I was coming back in decent shape. But I got a phone call from the suits in Croke Park to attend a meeting, and Brian came up with me. Brian McAniff he might have been chairman at that stage. So I had a 6-month ban from actually playing in two different, well, it was okay for me to go and play in Boston. it wasn't okay for me to play in New York when I was in Boston as such.
Sure.
So I missed that whole league. But we got to the, I think it was the league final. We played Offaly in the league final. And that was my first game back. That was my first game in Croke Park. So I came back and played wing half forward against Offaly in a league final in Croke Park.
Yes. League, was it the semi?
It's the league semi-final. League semi-final.
We beat Cork. That was my first that was my debut in Croke Park. Yeah. Cork, and then I Offaly was the next day. Yeah.
Yeah.
We were, Lions was in charge of them.
That's right. McManus scored a screamer.
They were on the neutron diet.
They were. They were all sorts of stuff. And then we just got pipped. But that, again, that was a really, really good side. Like, Barry McGowan was still playing. John Joe was still playing. Like, really, really, really strong side. So, yeah, the first day out in Croke Park.
Yeah, John, you mentioned, you know, as things went on there, obviously Mickey Mourne, McNiff was in and out, Mickey Mourne was in, McGaver, you know, various managers came in and out there. You were saying about the players at the time, you know, those players, obviously, Beattie and Sweeney, Dever, Noel Fred, you know,
Raymond,
the two Sweeneys,
Roper,
you know, McGuinness and yourself, midfield, Michael Higgs, Roper, a lot of good players. You were saying about the team missed something around, should they have come to Gillermore? You're quoted as saying that, you know, and I've just taken you up on that there. You know, and I know the effect that you had, speaking to John the Butcher, you had in 2005 and how you really pulled that team across the line, you know, and he was on about, he gave me a great light about McGuinness. He's, you know, that crazy and the genius, you know, there's a thin line. McGuinness was just about on the right side of it. But he was on about your role was massive there. And I was just wondering, even with myself, Captain Unions later on, I didn't really realise the effect, you know, I could have or should have had on certain people until very late on. So I'm just wondering, at that time, say my mid-20s, playing with Donegal, you know, when we know all the madness was going on, we had a decent team, a nearly team, was it up to us to then to pull together, or was it up to the manager to say, hey, here's the rules, here's how we do this?
It's a combination of both. I think it can, like, if take Armagh, for example, and whatever is going on from a management standpoint, from Armagh's point of view, it was driven internally within the squad. McGrain, McGeaney, those guys were driving the ship all the time. And I think we lacked that. And on a personal level, you know, as a senior player, I probably got that part of my game later on in my career where I was, as you know, whether I was playing well or not, I was very insular in how I was playing, and the focus was on me and getting myself right and getting things right. And I suppose we lacked the structure maybe some of those other teams had, because I look back in that part of our lives, and you were very much part of it, and we, from a talent perspective, we had as good a bunch of players that maybe had ever played at a county level. But it was like the 92 team was exactly the same, only they got across the line. They had come so close time and again, and then it was getting away from them, and then when it was nearly gone from them and nearly past it, that's when they turned it on, and that's when they pulled the whole thing together. And that 92 side was, I suppose, driven by the players themselves, and we never got a grip of that. I think what happened was we had a lot of good players and we had a lot of big personalities that maybe didn't click from a personal point of view, but because they were big personalities, it meant that there wasn't any very, very big strong personality that could drive it themselves. Like, there was no McGuinney, there was no McGrain, who, no matter what your personality was like, they would have grabbed the thing by the throat. And, you know, it's you look back and probably there's another 10 teams in the country could say exactly the same thing.
I suppose, yeah, and listen, not making excuses, I suppose that Armagh and that Tyrone team are the best that them two counties I've ever seen, which, you know, I look back, no offence to our friends in Fermanagh, but I was looking at Donegal the other year thinking, why could we not get one final where we maybe haven't got Armagh or Tyrone to beat, but anyway, we still had enough players to beat them on, as you said. And just, you know, out in Australia, McGeaney was sitting with John O'Keefe. I remember having lunch with him one day, and I remember McGeaney questioning O'Keefe upside down about Kerry, about tactics, about training, you know, and I could see him, and I was nearly going, this guy's fanatical. And speaking to him a few years later, I remember at the end of the season, they would have a coming together, and they would analyse what went good, what went bad and all that. And I could think, so also at the end of the season, you know what's going to kick off? It certainly isn't any football talk or analysing anything. And I think they had that depth, and we kind of resented that a wee bit because we always thought, we're playing our own way, but looking back, we needed an element of that to be brought into us. And as you say, we probably missed out a bit on that, and that's the thing about us. But the great thing, John, I suppose the story is like you mentioned about Niamh Connell, you know, growing up, you know, they weren't at the top of the football pile. Slowly but surely, they started to creep up the ladder thanks to, you know, Paddy Campbell, yourself, Johnny the Butcher, McGuinness, And, you know, obviously the tons of young lads was coming through. The tactics came in then. And of course we had the epic 2005. And I'd just like to know what your memories are about the first game and the game that you won.
Yeah, 2005 was probably, well, it was definitely an anomaly from our perspective because we'd never been there before. Everything was new. And I think, again, I was coming to the back end of my career. I wasn't playing county football, which was a huge advantage from my perspective. Because I think what, you know, back in the day, you left so much behind you when you were playing county football. You'd be playing Armagh in an Ulster final or an All-Ireland semi-final, or you'd be playing Tyrone on a Sunday, and you'd be exhausted. You'd come out, you'd be mentally, you'd be physically, you'd be shattered. You'd left everything behind you. And then the following week, unlike now, where we were talking about county footballers not playing for, you know, 3 months, and then they're, you know, back then it was like you're playing the county championship the following Sunday, and you had to get yourself up, go back at it again, go back into this club structure where you hadn't played all year. And you kind of nearly upset it in a couple of different ways, in the sense that they weren't used to playing with you, and their expectations were high, and you weren't delivering. So I found that when I stepped away from the county and played with the club, I probably didn't enjoy a year as much in any previous year, because I just went and trained, and I was part of the group, and we had a great bunch of young fellas coming through. And I think what happened was all those guys were unknowns. Anthony Thompson was unknown. Liam McLoone was unknown. Like, we had an unknown 15 years of county finals that nobody knew about, and then that was blended in with a couple of older lads. And then the other thing is that's the first real year that Jim came to the fore, because like Jim was playing, and you know, and then he got injured, and all of a sudden he was coaching, okay, and he brought a whole new aspect to the way we trained, how we prepared, the organisation, video sessions. Like, I'd been playing county football for 13 years prior to that, and you know, video analysis was, you know, something you did on the bus when you were watching something on you know, pass the time. And there we were sitting 2 hours after a training session analysing who was doing what, where and why. And he just simplified everything. And I think that was his greatest ability, was A, instilling a sense of belief in players and in a club that had failed to deliver for, you know, since I was growing up. We got beaten finals, we got beaten semi-finals. We were thereabouts. We had the epic back battle with St. Union's. Really good, Glendy said, maybe, what year did you beat Ballyshannon in the big one?
99.
You beat us down in Fulcara by a point or two after we beat you in Glenties, you beat us down there, and we went down there. And that, you know, that was the toughest game you had that year. That team on any other year would have won a county title and didn't. And I suppose 2005 just changed everything. Jim's attitude to everything, his trend to everything. And a little bit of luck as well. I remember in the drawing game, I think John Harron was in America that year. And Shane O'Donnell, from my perspective, I had a poor first game. Didn't feel it played well. Shane tortured me, as his job was to do. You know, everywhere I was, he was. John came on, and he was straight through with the last kick of the game, 30 yards out. Put your money on it, definitely going over the bar. And the referee, in his wisdom, decided that we'd played enough time, which was... obviously right. And we, you know, I thought, right, that's it. Went back to training on Tuesday night and met people going, he missed your chance. I think we were maybe 5-1 to beat Unions the first day, and I think we went to 12-1 the second day, and which is crazy. But we'd missed our boat, because that tends to what happened. The underdog misses his opportunity, you're gone. And went to training on Tuesday night, was sore, tired, missed the boat. And by the end of that training session, McGuinness had it so wound up, genuinely, and we changed our tactics in a period of 6 days. Okay, everything changed, and by the time I left Tuesday night, I was 100% sure we were going to beat Unions the following Sunday.
Yeah.
Even to the point where I met Sean McFadden and Gavin Crawford down the town on the Wednesday, and they went, we had money on the last day. You know, we didn't lose whatever. I don't bet much, so I don't know how it worked out. What do you think? I says, absolutely, and that was the attitude of the whole side. And I think McGuinness did that with the 2012 team. And as regards instilling that sense of belief in what you could do and putting a structure in place that allowed you just to simplify everything.
Yeah.
You know, take all the...
I think, John, that, you know, the underdog thing, you see, get ruled out because of your system. It's a wee bit like when Niamh Connell went into Ulster for the first time, ended up in the Ulster final. The likes of Unions were going in, and they were a good team, plenty of good players, but they're playing Donegal football.
Yep.
They had to play a system, and that's why when Glenn Swilly went in, they got the Ulster final as well, and that's why you're seeing teams get over last year, you know, winning Ulster and Neaconnell coming so close. When you're in a strange ground playing a strange team, things can go wrong for you. Mm. You know, for us, we often played Cross McGlen. But that aside, if you had had a structure in place, it would have given you a bit of a chance. But, you know, looking at John having played in those games, I think the big thing was, and you probably don't want to say this yourself, whenever the ball broke down and you were in around your 30 or 40, they could give it. Neaconnell could give it to you. You could take a couple of shoulders, kick pass, and get them out of trouble. And every time we swarmed, the ball came to you. You were playing like a quarterback in a role. You would take a few challenges and get them on. That was vital to that team and coming out. And a great bit of history. You just mentioned Shane O'Donnell torching you. I was just wondering about this year and what you think around the sledging and the bit of stuff was going on. I think it, you know, talking to Brad, as I say, massive bit of sport in history. I think for me as a neutral looking on, bit marred by the stuff now. I'm not blaming either team for that. Both teams was at it. But I'm just thinking, if we're watching sport and we've seen the boxing in Healy Park last week, you know, if you want to box, go and box, and that's not a part of our sport. The sledging now, John, is it something that people have just been kind of like, that's part of the game? I mean, was Shane O'Donnell in your ear that day?
No, no. I have a different attitude towards that Oma situation. I think you hit a guy a box, it's manly. You know, and he has the opportunity to hit you a box. You know, like, I think sledging is cowardly, no matter who's doing it. I think it's for a guy to stand in your ear, protected by the referee and all the umpires and everybody else talking about your family or whatever vulnerability you might have, is a cowardly thing to do. And whether that's a Donegal player, a Glenties player, or a guy from Armagh, it doesn't take backbone to stand with 15 cameras around you, being a big guy, talking into a guy's ear to see can you mentally damage the guy. Sport is sport. We go out to play sport to enjoy sport, okay? I have two kids, you have kids. You don't, like, if that's where we're going, and that's what we're going to be, that's how you get into a guy's head. You know, back in the day, you know, you had plenty of battles with Andy McNulty and stuff like that. But, you know, but it wasn't, their stuff wasn't, didn't go across the line. You know, you got a slap, you took a slap. You know, it's just got to the extreme right now where it's nearly psychological warfare is part of the game. Yeah. And I think when that happens, like, to be honest, if when I was playing and some guy had gone after my vulnerabilities, I would have broken him too, right? But back then, a guy wouldn't talk into you because he'd know he'd get broken into because there wasn't all this level of protection. I think the protection is there for the betterment of the game and the betterment of the players, and that is right. But then it shouldn't be abused by people because they're protected, that then they can go after a guy's vulnerability and then try to hurt him psychologically. I just don't agree with that in any way, shape, or form.
And I think we need to put John in charge of the rules here. If you're sledging, you're allowed to throw a box.
Just think a bit of MMA and a bit of MMA. It's hard to
that's
fit.
That's a good sledging. John, tell me, I'm a man that I've re-operation myself there. How's the knees holding up there, giving you a bit of
a jump? Listen, my knees, I went to the doctor at 28 years of age, and ironically enough, my wife met Dr. McGuard in the hospital there maybe about a year ago. I don't know what age Dr. McGuard is now, but at the time he said to me at 28, so that's not today or yesterday, he said, I would rather have my knees than your knees. And that's 20 years ago. So they're not in good shape. But you just, you know, stay as fit as you can and try, John, let you know yourself. Recovery and player preparation back in the day isn't maybe as high tech as it is right now.
Yeah, John, listen, fantastic talking to you. You know, I'm just thinking, even talking to Butcher, just what a legend you are down there, because everybody realises what 2005 was and how integral you were to that, John. And whenever you have your first, maybe on your second million, whenever you have that done, they might get you back down there for a bit of coaching or management. Yeah, is that something that you think will ever happen in the future?
No, you know, I loved, and people ask me this all the time, you're not involved. A lot of players go and get very involved again straight away, and that's what they do. If you look at Michael Murphy right now, you know, he's already involved. And that, for me, I loved playing, and I loved being competitive and loved training, right? And then when I walked away from it. It's got to the stage right now where it's so time intensive. There's so much commitment needed that I don't think I'll ever be in a position that I want to do. And I don't particularly want to do that. Like, I think, you know, the way the game has gone, what I like to play in this era right now and the way football is, and it might have suited me. It might have suited me perfectly. But would I have been able to give it the level of commitment that those guys do? I don't know. And I suppose then the alternative to that is you came into the squad, you know, at the back end when I was leaving as such. I came in 93, and that was a whole different thing. Like, you know, guys training, you trained and then they went for pints. You know, we played in league in 93, and back in the day it was a four format. They changed the format in 93. So they put four different divisions. You played somebody in Division 1, Division 2, Division 3, Division 4. And I remember, I think it was back then, the league was before Christmas and after Christmas, and Mick and Iff and his wisdom decided, like, we're coming near the championship, lads, we need to cut down on the drink here. So we're playing Kilkenny in the league in 93, who would be, wouldn't be known for their football prowess at the time. And he said, right, I'm going to bring them to this really, as Mick and Iff does, really high-end hotel, but in the back of somewhere in the Midlands, where he could shut the bar down whenever it mattered. So everybody would go to bed, starting championship training. So we landed. And then the first thing that happened was a busload landed at the hotel of dentists from Belfast. Another busload came from Galway. And then another busload came. So Megan Iff and his wisdom had booked us into this hotel in the middle of nowhere to make sure everybody went to bed early. And 200 people, they were all dentists at colleges from that had arrived at the hotel for the dentist ball that was on exactly the same place that same weekend. Didn't go well. Didn't go. But it wouldn't happen now. McInnes or Declan would have it just completely locked out.
Like, I remember when the first games we went to, that first year played with Donegal, we stayed down in Westmeath before we played off. And there was a nightclub on. And that me and Tony Boyle were together, and the tunes were kicking. And I actually would know them. I was trying to name the tunes to Tony. They were the room was actually bouncing the night before, down in Mullingar. But John, listen, I think you do yourself a disservice. I don't think there's any system or any era of football you couldn't have played in. I often think about 2012, though, the way you played in the hole and spraying passes and being able to come out, it would have been perfect. So, John, listen, thanks so much for sharing your story here in the DL Debate.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be there.
So, folks, that's a wrap for this episode, number 5. We're moving into next week, where we've got, as I say, the old enemy, Tyrone, coming down the line in Ballybuffet. And what is a game? Listen, we can't take it for granted. We're going to stay in the division, plus putting down a marker for the championship. So join us next Monday. We'll be getting reaction from the big game in Ballybuffet, looking to secure our Division 1 status. That's it for now.
The DL Debate with Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love till 9 p.m. daily in Sarah's kitchen. And there's free admission entertainment every weekend.